Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumya Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. I guess it's not every day that you end up offending a king, but let's say you did. Would you know how to apologize to him? Recently in Ghana, a journalist made some comments on television about the king of the Asante tribe, and soon she found herself at his palace apologizing. But the whole thing didn't go down very well. Daniel Dadze of BBC Africa is from Ghana, and I spoke to him to find out about the protocols and what went wrong with the apology.
So the Asante tribe, or the Ashanti tribe, It's one of the largest tribes in Ghana. It has a very rich history, one of the most respected tribes in the country. So there's an interesting fact about the Ashantis. The symbol of the Ashanti kingdom is the stool that the king sits on, and it's made of gold. So it's called the golden stool. There's a bit of lore that it actually came from heaven, and it settled on the knees of the first chief of the Ashanti tribe. It was said that whoever has the golden stool is actually the overlord of the Ashantis. So when they finally, after a series of wars, lost against the British, The British demanded the golden stool, but they gave them a fake. So, as a result, the Ashantis believe they were actually never colonized. In terms of how it relates to the story, this young broadcaster, Ifeanyi Apokia, made a statement on air that was critical of the king of the Ashanti people. And that is what started everything.
And she's not from that tribe. She's from a different tribe.
Yeah, she's from a different tribe.
The current king of the Ashanti kingdom, how powerful is he? Does he have political power? And compared to the other kings and chiefs of other tribes, is he more powerful?
The simple answer is yes. Mm-hmm. He's a very influential figure. None of the power is spelled out in any official document. But just like in this case of the story that you're describing, she hasn't been taken to any court. She hasn't officially been charged by any police case, but she felt she needed to go and apologize. They are definitely influential people, chiefs all over the country, own land. And so it could also be that, you know, that the farmlands in the Ashanti region are largely owned by his sub-chiefs who report to him. Mm. And remember that the Ashanti region is also has some of the largest gold deposits in Ghana. There's a lot of soft power in there. There's a lot of influence in there. So there's no presidential candidate I can remember who hasn't in some way shown him respect or gone to acknowledge him or gone to greet him during the campaign trail. These are things that must happen.
Powerful man.
Yeah.
So what did this journalist say that was so offensive?
The background is that it was a program about peace building, and an incident had occurred that the journalist expected the Ashanti king, Otunfo, to use this influence to influence this matter. She went on to say it in a way to say that he's not doing well enough and he's not performing well enough. And that is what sparked everything. A lot of people have referred to the tone in which she spoke. And remember that in Ghana and most African countries, we generally show respect to our elders. I mean, as a journalist in Ghana, one of the first things I was told when I started broadcasting was always use people's titles, even if it's Mr. If the person is older than you, speak to the person like he's older than you. So the combination of him being, you know, a man who is much older than she is, and him being a man who wields so much power and influence, sort of brought this conclusion.
From what I understand, if you want to criticize the chief, the king of the Ashanti kingdom, you have to go through a certain channel. You cannot just go on TV and basically criticize him. What is that channel that you have to go through in order to give your criticism?
Yeah, so traditional scholars tell us that the way to do it is to go through their mother. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to be their biological mother, because I'm sure you'd imagine that you don't always expect the mother of a 70-year-old to be around.
Yeah.
But there is an office of a queen mother. They occupy that position of authority. So the concept really is that the counsel flows from above to below.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an idea, you have to go to someone above him who would then give him that counsel. That's the thinking behind
it. So the office of the counsel of Queen Mother is above him?
In an advisory role.
So why does she have to apologize so quickly? Because she went on TV when she made these remarks, this criticism about the chief. And then it was very shortly after that she had to apologize.
There was a lot of public criticism in the first place. This trended on social media. I think it just speaks to the kind of influence that this person has.
And she had to go in person and apologize. What happened?
So in the first place, there are some rules around going before the regent of the Ashanti Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was 12 and I was part of a group of students who were in an excursion to the Ashanti Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And we went to his palace and we wanted to say hi to him. And some of the sub-chiefs came in and told us that you have women wearing trousers, we can't allow you to go in. And you're not dressed in all black, we can't allow you to go in. Now, in that case, an exception was made for us. Possibly because we haven't insulted him anyway. I hope not. So again, these are rules that are part of traditions that are flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within reasonable means.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite flexible. I was allowed to go and see him. We took a picture with him. And he spoke to us. He was quite excited, in spite of the fact that we had clearly broken a protocol.
Yeah.
But when I watched the video, every protocol had been followed. I watched the video. She went on her knees. First of all, she was dressed as if she was going for a funeral. If an African is going for a funeral, they often wear all black.
Mm-hmm. And that's how you should go and visit the chief.
That is the stated protocol. Mm-hmm. If you are not, you know, like a chief or anything, if you have a matter that you are bringing to him, you go there in mourning. So you go there very respectful, very demure, if I can use that expression. Yeah, so she was dressed in all black, covered from head to toe. She was on her knees. She gave her apology. The presenter of the show who hosted her was there with her, dressed in a similar matter, also gave her apology. It kind of felt like looking like an extreme case of someone who has been called before they're the school headmaster.
It's giving me anxiety listening to you. So she followed the protocol. She went in person, got on her knees, begged for forgiveness. What happened?
She was refused.
Why?
They did not accept the apology. When she went to the court, Asantehene Otumfuo himself was not there. Chief who was there said, take your cursed self and your troubles with you. Whatever comes your way in the future, deal with it on your own. Do not ever return here.
Okay.
That was the response to the apology.
So what was the reaction of people to all of this?
It was mixed. There were definitely people who supported what the chief said. There were also people who agreed with her in the first place.
Mm.
And there are also people who do felt like she actually said nothing wrong, per se. I did read a number of opinions of people saying things like, you know, she was calling you to use your influence for good. It's been mixed reactions. It's a divisive issue, like most issues are.
Danielle Dadze of BBC Africa. So now you know what to do in the unlikely case you end up upsetting a Ghanaian king and need to apologize. But you shouldn't only say sorry to royalty. I was curious to find out how people say sorry in different cultures and languages. So as usual, I turned to my international colleagues for some expert help.
I am Ehsan Mahmood and I work with BBC Urdu as a video journalist. I would say is that Pakistanis generally, they're not really expressive and we're also very cheeky. So what we generally do is we would slide an apology in the middle of a conversation and then very quickly move on to a new topic so that we don't have to sort of be very upfront about it. If I had a fight with my partner, I'd just go to my partner and be like, have you had food? So it'll just be like a way to sort of lead into an apology or something like that. When I moved to the UK, it was so strange for me because here everyone's like apologizing. If you run into someone down the road, they're just going to apologize like 5 times. And in Pakistan, we wouldn't really apologize so much. And I think it's just the difference of cultures. One of the most common that we would use is mazrat, which is like, I'm sorry, or, you know, maafi de do, which is like, please forgive me.
I'm Lisa Fox from the BBC Russian service. The typical way to say sorry in Russia is «прости меня, пожалуйста», which literally means «forgive me, please». In Russia, we also have a tradition called Forgiveness Sunday, which happens on the last Sunday before Easter. The tradition is that you call your family and friends and apologize for any sorrows you've caused, even if they're not. In my family, the custom is to say «прости мне мои прегрешения, вольные и невольные», which literally means «forgive me for all the sins I've committed, intentionally or not». And another person forgives you by saying «Бог простит, и я прощаю», which means «God will forgive you, and so I too».
Hello, I'm Sonuk Lee from BBC Korean Language Service. In Korea, the way of saying sorry varies depending on the relationship between the speaker and the listener due to the complex honorific system in the language. In many cases, we say 죄송합니다. This is used in formal situations or with people we don't know well, and we often bow when saying 죄송합니다. However, when the listener is younger or in a lower position than the speaker, the expression 미안합니다 is commonly used. 미안합니다 is slightly less formal than 죄송합니다. And in close relationship, the most common way to say sorry is simply 미안해, which is not an honorific form.
I'm Wen Qing from the Global Chinese Uni. In China, the way we say sorry is 对不起, but there are other ways depending on the scenario. You can use the phrase 不好意思 if you've accidentally been rude, or 抱歉, which is more formal way of apologizing. And another interesting thing about apologizing in Chinese culture is that your parents almost never apologize. Instead, they might bring you a plate of fruit as a sign of peacemaking. My parents always, like, never apologize to me, but instead they always bring me some fruit or some snacks, which is like, let's make peace.
I'm Darius Rajabian. I'm from BBC Persian, originally from Tajikistan. And in Tajikistan, when we want to say sorry, when we apologize, we hold our hand on our chest and we tilt our head, or actually bow down and say, Bebakhshit. Or I say Puzesh, which is an older version of the same. If you want to be sarcastic, we just add another sound after Bebakhshit, Ah. It's very simple. Bebakhshit, Ah. And the intonation differs as well. Well, as you said, you say Ozr Micham. We say that as well. It sounds like I beg your pardon. It's kind of sarcastic as well.
Thank you to my BBC World Service colleagues for those insights into how to say sorry. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Farnak Amidi, and this is The Fifth Floor. Now, some people in Hong Kong may feel that they are owed an apology. From whom? Well, cab drivers. There's around 46,000 cabbies in the city, but according to some passengers, they are notoriously grumpy. The Hong Kong Taxi Council and the government have recently put efforts into trying to change this image and patch up the fraught relationship between cab drivers and passengers. My next guest can tell us more about this. He's a journalist for BBC Chinese, Martin Yip. Welcome to The Fifth Floor.
Thank you for having me.
So, Martin, tell me, when was the last time you took a cab in the city? And do you remember what was the experience like?
Well, actually, I do take taxis quite often because of the need to connect from where I live to the nearest bus stop. And it's so easy to bump into these grumpy cab drivers. Say there's a cab where the taxi driver displayed all sort of signs of accepting different kinds of electronic payments, including autobus card, which is that kind of a card you take every day to get on the train and all that. So I politely ask, can I pay with my autobus card? And then this man just started ranting, rather angry, like, this is not my sign, it's my daytime partner, I'm the night shift, I don't have this, you pay in cash, as if I was trying to dodge my fare.
Oh, wow. So it's easy to get a grumpy one. Tell us about the stories you've heard about taxi drivers being rude from other people.
There was a lady who told me a story. She can't find her purse right away, but it was just something like a few couple of seconds, and the grumpy driver was already say, how come you can't afford the taxi journey like this? You know, that kind of weird charge that somebody cannot afford a taxi journey just because he or she was just looking for the purse.
Other than rudeness and being grumpy, what other problems have passengers reported?
Refusal to go to certain places. That's one of the major complaints across the territory. Everybody knows it. There's many reasons behind it. They don't know their ways, or they just don't want to waste their time being trapped in traffic jams. The other very noticeable problem with taxi drivers are the amount of mobile phones on their dashboard. They could have like 5 or 7 smartphones stuck on the dashboard. What are they for? They used to use wireless radio to communicate between other taxi drivers and their so-called taxi channels, which would give them bookings. Now they replace it with their smartphones. They do similar things on the smartphones instead. And another argument between passengers and the cabbies is, they kept focusing on the phones rather than focusing on the road when they drive. Even in the highway on the speed like 100 kilometers or so, they still keep their eyes on the phones looking for the next order. The other thing is they refuse to use GPS, but they don't know the way to go, and you ended up with them driving extra miles, and you just don't know if they are doing that deliberately or not for the extra fares. We've been reading of so many stories of overcharging, these anecdotes from mainland Chinese tourists who pop over to Hong Kong. Say, for example, that a journey of less than 2 kilometers, which is within the flagged down fare on the meter, that would have cost $29, that's roughly $3.70 in US dollars, but they ended up being charged for $100. So it's very obvious and overcharging, which is obviously illegal. There's plenty of people sharing stories like these.
And these are not just rumors. There are a lot of official complaints being filed, and there has been an increase in these complaints as well.
So yes, there's plenty of complaints received. This figure that I can cite from the Traffic Complaint Unit, they received over 11,000 complaints in 2023. But the number of cases that they could prosecute are very low. You can file the complaint, but then it's just very hard to prove that they're guilty. So the government has introduced a new demerit point system in September. So there are certain behaviors that would end up with them having extra points on their driving license. Usually you would talk about speeding and all that, but for cabbies, they would now have to face demerit points if they are overcharging, refusing to go to the destination that the passenger asked him or her to go to. So in theory, this could keep them a check that they would behave and stay away from doing all these dodgy things from the past, but it's just something that we have to wait to see if it would work at all.
Tell us about these courtesy ambassadors that have been introduced.
Well, that's actually an initiative by the Hong Kong Taxi Council. So they sent out a team of around 10 people doing this thing at different taxi stands, giving out leaflets to both taxi drivers and passengers, telling them what kind of courtesies should they practice when they take a taxi in Hong Kong. And people in charge say is to kind of improve the education on both sides, but that's all they're doing. So how much could that contribute to an improvement is just another question mark.
But what is behind this grumpy behavior and overcharging? Is this a sign of a bigger problem, a deeper problem in the system?
There's something quite crucial to mention when we talk about all these problems in Hong Kong, that is the way you could own a taxi. Just let's begin with the number of licenses that we have. That's only just over 18,000 taxi licenses in Hong Kong. There has not been much increased since the 1990s. So at present, one urban taxi license would cost 2.79 million Hong Kong dollars. So we're talking about something like 360,000 US dollars. It's that kind of money that you need to get a license for you to legally to run a cab. And that's why you ended up with the rich people holding these licenses. And unless you happen to be lucky enough to have a license from ages ago and keep hanging on to it, most likely you will have to rent a cab rather than owning a cab. And that really impacts how earnings are being channeled. There's always been complaints from frontline taxi drivers that every time when the government improved fare hike, it would all go into these license holders' pockets once they increase the rent for the cab. And just one of many reasons that makes them grumpy.
So with all these initiatives that are taking place, have you seen any change yourself?
I won't say that I've seen a lot of changes so far. But there are younger taxi drivers recently, people who are more polite, but you still get cabbies, even when they're polite. They drive in some way that makes the whole journey feel more uncomfortable to you, like they keep pressing gases out of no reason or just brake out of no reasons. Bits and pieces that is still impacting how a quality taxi journey looks like in Hong Kong. So it's really a wait-and-see thing, I'm afraid.
Martin Yip of BBC Chinese. I'm Farhana Kamidi. The Fifth Floor team this week was
Alicia Joya,
Caroline Ferguson,
and
Hannah Dean.
The sound engineers were
Emma Hart
and
Bob Nettles.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.